Hi there, listener. You're about to experience Tadpog. Tyler and Dave play old games, and there will be plenty of game talk, but also copious amounts of crude, off-color, offensive, and immature speech. So if you are of a rather sensitive humor constitution, we're just letting you know what you're in for with this show. It has games. It has jokes. You know, just games and jokes. Take the games, take the jokes, and have a good time.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another Tadpog podcast. It's a show that happens twice a week, where it's just two old guys.
Just two. We talked about bringing on a ringer, because we probably need it.
Mm-hmm.
We probably need it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have one, though.
Nope.
For various reasons.
Various people were uninterested or unavailable.
Yeah. So it's just us. You just got us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this week, Original Flavor Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're playing through Dorkly's top 25 N64 games.
Yes, we are.
This week, we are playing number 12, Perfect Dark.
I feel like we should say the titles together from now on.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. See, I almost wanted to say it in like racist Japanese, like Perfecto Dagaru.
Any particular reason?
No. No, it just came up. It just bubbled up out of me. I almost did it.
Well, you know,
but instead I referenced it, so it's less racist.
reputable psychologists do say that the things that you want to say on a podcast reveal your true personality.
Well, Perfect Dark.
Perfect Dark.
Well, I guess we have opinions about Perfect Dark. We have opinions that I think if you listen to the show regularly,
yeah,
you see how we feel about this N64 list.
Do you see a pattern? They see a pattern emerging.
So I have lots of other talking points. We'll get to first before we get. Don't worry, it's not a quiz. Don't worry. Or I'm sorry, not it's not a quiz.
Yeah,
if you're
a little disappointed.
But all right, I'm your bearded host, Tyler, and I think I've talked about some stuff before, Dave. But
a few things you've talked about on the show,
particularly about bad jobs. Or bad things in jobs.
Okay. Yeah, you have.
So I was talking to a peach of a person the other day about horrible job traits. And they are in a new job where their boss is crazy. And I was like, oh yeah? Well, but one of my former bosses, Al Crazy's your boss. And I won, but just barely with the sick day policy on a job I used to have. Which
is this the one I'm thinking of that we can't say, of course, on the show, but yeah. It is the one I'm thinking
because
of.
Because they're extraordinarily litigious.
Yeah.
So,
man, okay. There's another story I want you to tell really bad.
Okay. Oh, I could probably do that. As long as I don't say names, I could probably say that
okay,
now.
Awesome. Great.
But the sick day policy was if you called in, one, you couldn't call in the same day. You need to call in the day before.
Okay.
For the next day. Okay. Right. Well, that'll be like 4 a.m. or whatever, but sure, fine. But the day you called in, you also had to bring in directly a doctor's excuse. So okay. You had to, the day you got sick, you had to go to a ready care or whatever, get a doctor's excuse, bring it and any prescriptions that you were given written in to be faxed. And then my boss would then call the doctor to make sure it was you that came in.
Yeah.
And this is the correct diagnosis and blah, 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 blah.
I'm pretty sure doctors love that.
Oh, well, I'm sure they love that, and too, I'm sure that's against HIPAA, but
yeah, probably.
But I'm sure she's gotten away with it before. So, but I remember because I was that one. I mentioned that time I shit my pants so bad because I was so sick because I had to go in, immediately go to Ready Care, come back, give her all my stuff, you know, and then still like if you don't bring in same day directly hand it to my employer, like you couldn't like give it to your next superior, like it had to be directly to her. And if it wasn't the same day, fired. And however much.
Just like that. No, just, like warning. No.
Just like that.
Okay.
I mean, Kentucky's a free to work state.
Right.
So she could be just be like, I don't like that green shirt. You're out of here.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. So it was also, let's see, where was I going with that? And then, or however much the sick allotment is for, like, not report for the next 2 days or whatever, come that third day, if you're still sick or if you still have a fever and you don't come in, you're fired. So that's just
okay.
That's just it. There's no strike policy, no. I mean, turnover this place was ridiculous.
ridiculous.
I mean, it's ridiculous to like say there was no like strike policy for legitimately being sick in an environment where you could most definitely make other people sick.
Yeah, because it was a very delicate environment because it was a nursing home. I'm not gonna say it by name, but it's a nursing home. So if you're
allegedly,
because like man, like when someone gets sick there, it fucking spreads and it's. Bad.
When
it's
someone
bad
gets sick
everybody.
There, you lose a client.
Yeah, it's bad. So you would think like they would take every precaution, but like man, it was rough with all that kind of shit. Also, like not allowed to. Let's see, no days off your first year.
Zero.
You can't. Yeah.
No vacation. Days.
When you come in and you can give your exceptions for the rest of the year, like when you're hired, like I already had this vacation planned, this and this, you'll probably get that. But any other time that comes up, like you have a wedding, you have anything else that props up in that first year, sorry. Hopefully those days, you'll get those days off in your rotation because you're not allowed any days off. No paid, but nothing. And you're not allowed, like it's, you can get by with it sometimes, like switching the schedule. Like if somebody else will cover for you and you cover for that person, so the hours all even out. But most of the time, that's not approved. You can't even switch days. And I was told directly that I was not allowed to complain about my schedule.
Okay.
You are not, period. You appeared, you are not allowed to complain. Oh, okay. You can control that. So that's a wonderful thing for you to say.
Well, you're complaining about it right now. Uh-huh. You're in breach at this moment.
Fuck you. So then that got me thinking about, like, ridiculous stuff at a few other jobs. Like, whenever I worked at Huddle House, because I know, I don't think he will mind, because he was also a victim of this. Because I worked with Ramon of Super Bomberman 2 fame and Smash Brothers 3DS fame, that we both worked at Huddle House together. He got me the job there. And I started out as a cook, and then I moved up to a server, because you make a fuck ton more money as a server there. And Ramon was a cook, and what the boss there loved to do. His dad owned it, and then he was the manager of the place. He loved to change people's schedules the last minute, like the day before. Like, you're given your schedule a week in advance.
Yeah.
He loved to change it, like, the day before.
And everyone's? Just change the entire thing?
He was just a few people. He would just, if he thought he'd get away with it, he would change it, like, and switch your day off or whatever, because he loved to have, he was so nervous about people not having enough people. And it's like we were a super busy Huddle House. We weren't. But he would try and have you come in on your day off. So he'd switch your days off so he'd be double booked. And then that'd just be it. So then you realize that.
So like what? Would you get a call?
I shouldn't even be in today.
Would you get like a call or something?
No.
Like a day you're supposed to be off?
You would not,
like, where
you would
are
not
you?
Get a call. So that happened to me one day. And then the next day I was like, I quit. I'm not going to deal with it. I don't want to deal with this shit. So, and then same thing happened to Ramon, because Ramon was like, he had the next day off. So he stayed up all night with his friends at like, and he usually worked, I think he would end up working like first shift a lot, which is really fucking early.
Sure.
So I think he went like, we went to bed at like 3:30 and gets a call at like 5:30. Like, where are you?
So they do call.
What the fuck are you talking about? If you don't show up.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah. They won't call you and tell you,
hey, that it's been changed. Right. You know, right. Yeah. Gotcha.
They'll just call you and bitch at you if you're not there.
What the fuck?
So Ramon was like, he was still kind of drunk, and he was like, yeah, no, not coming in. And then we might have to let you go. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good. And like after like a month, I think like they asked him to come back, and he went back. But it was a whole huge mess. Last time I went down there, all of the employees at that Huddle House left and started their own restaurants.
Really?
And then now the owner there like manages a Kroger or something. Hmm. He left.
Somewhere where they like having their schedules rearranged.
Somewhere, yeah, where that's it's like just being on call at all times at that grocery store.
I was hoping that you were going to say when your employer, your very strict employer with their doctor policy. I was hoping you were going to say that this employer contacted the doctor whose office you shit all over. And the doctor was like, no, never heard of him.
But just the fact, like, yeah, that she would call and had to check to make sure that this wasn't a fake doctor's excuse.
Yeah.
Because the peach of a person I was talking to, like, their policy was, like, their boss watches social media like a hawk. So if you call in that day, they're all over your Facebook all day long. So if you like post a picture or show anything, they're all over you or whatever your yeah. whatever your excuse is, whether you're sick or like a lot of people will say like I have to go to court or I have to do that.
Yeah.
They will then go to the courthouse and make sure to see if you're on the docket that day and, wow. and shit like that. So
cool.
Yeah. yeah. I remember the one time like I got it's not easy to make me like really, really angry, but like I took on the mode of like my mother this one day when I worked at Pizza Hut where I got so angry. I was just about to cry because I was so mad because I was a delivery driver at Pizza Hut, which honestly, pretty great gig. The hours kind of suck, but a lot of times if we weren't super busy, I could leave early. I would just work kind of like the main dinner hours or people ordering pizza, still make plenty of money as a delivery driver. Plus your wage, you don't get like server's wage or anything like that. You still make a regular minimum wage.
It's a dangerous job, I hear. Were you ever worried?
No, not in Murray. Yeah. Not in Murray. It was yeah. okay. But and then Murray has like a smaller delivery range. It was always, I enjoyed the job.
Yeah. Did you ever see a naked person?
No. No, sadly not.
Okay.
Josh did.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of course Josh did.
It was a dude. It wasn't.
I think he told that story on the show.
Yeah,
didn't he?
The guy dropping the towel.
Yeah.
But like a manager that like I did not like. This guy was like he was such a prick. But like
language, please.
He was such a cock that I mean I could not stand being around the guy. But I come in one day and I see even though you're a delivery driver and when you're not delivering pizzas you wash dishes and do like. Prep for the ingredients that go on the pizza.
All right.
It's pretty easy.
The stuff that I would like to do if I worked there.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
But like I come in and like my prep list and dishes and stuff like that, usually I can knock that out. I knock that out in 45 minutes and then just sitting around going on deliveries for the rest of the night. But I come in and like my prep list is like massive. Stuff I've never done and quantities I've never done. And this manager is like all over me about getting all this shit done. And then he leaves like really early. He's supposed to do like an 8-hour shift and he leaves after like 3. Well, it turns out that he was going on vacation to like Tijuana or some shit like the next day and he wanted to leave early. So he took all the shit he was supposed to do as a manager and just added it onto my list.
Delegation.
Oh, I was God. When I found that out, I remember I drove up there and I threw my uniform into the store manager, I just threw it. It's like, I'm done. I'm not dealing with this guy's shit. That's if he had asked me like, hey, I really want to get out of here early.
Yeah.
I would have done it. I would like, even though I hate the guy, had he asked me like, and he would have owed me a favor and it would have been fine. But then they asked me to stay. The guy, they got a hold of him on vacation. He had to call me and apologize. And then he apologized to me again whenever we were actually at the store together. But it was just like, such a bullshit apology.
Oh, sure. He doesn't want to lose a job.
Because he walked in and was like, hey, listen to me. I'm sorry about whatever happened. And I just look at him and then turn back around. He's like, hey, I'm trying to apologize to you. And I was like, you have to, is everything fine? And I'm just like, we'll see.
Was he Danny DeVito?
Kind of. He was like a redneck Danny DeVito.
Just not, and, who worked not at a funny. Pizza Hut.
Yeah, not funny. No. Then I think the other really bad places that I talked about like Cirque du Soleil when I worked there. It was just like the sadness parade of all the broken down Asian kids and Russian kids.
Their Asian comes out again. And then you're really revealing a lot.
And then the restaurant that I just went and basically did like, it's called being a stage. You go and you work basically just a night for free just to feel out the stuff, talk to the people. If they like you, they'll keep you on or whatever. And I went in. It was a super high-end restaurant, really nice in D.C. So I went in and their kitchen was like really strangely set up. But we hit the dinner rush and they asked me to go in and get, you know, X, Y, and Z out of the walk-in. And I walk in and it was like a mad scientist lab because they had like the plastic quart containers everywhere filled with all sorts of like liquid and solids, but nothing labeled, nothing dated. I don't know this kitchen. I've never worked in there. I don't know what any of this shit is. And it's not labeled. And I know for the amount of corrugated containers that are in there,
yeah.
they're not using this shit on rotation. No one else surely knows what every single thing in here is.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm walking around trying to figure out, like, is this green stuff? Is this gloopy? Is this, like, a heart in here? I don't know what the fuck this is.
I'm pretty sure this is a cow fetus and formaldehyde. I don't... Why am I in biology class in high school? I don't...
Basically, it was like that. It was like watching, you know, like, the format, like, that lab, everything in formaldehyde. It was yeah. awful. And, like, toward the back, I smelled something that smelled. So I walk back to the back, and they have a giant metal bowl full of, like, rabbit innards. Like,
what? Wait, like, wait. Did you say rabbit?
Rabbit innards.
Innards?
Like kidneys, hearts, whatever.
Bunny guts.
Bunny guts. Just in this open bowl, and it smelled what? Terrible. I don't know how long it fucking been there. Like, not there, covered, not dated. Like, I don't know how the fuck they got this amount of just, like, the insides of a rabbit just, like... If they had just, like, found a whole bunch of them and served them up one night, I just put all that shit in a bowl and put it back in the bag.
Was there a ring of cultists around it chanting?
Oh, God, it was so gross. I remember then I walked. I thought I found what I assumed was the stuff they wanted me to find. I came back out, and, like, despite the fact we're still, like, they're kind of busy, the executive chef has, like, a bunch of people around him, and... He's put a trash bag on over his chef's coat and put his arms through, so it's like a...
California Raisins costume.
Yeah, exactly. And he has this... I mean, we were in, like, D.C., so, like, getting really good crabs is, like, you know, just driving not very far. And he has, like,
I hear
this,
the prostitutes are not very clean. Yeah.
He has this huge bucket of just live crabs, and then what looks like he's shortened the handle on a sledgehammer... And he's just, like, picking up crabs and just smashing them with his hammer and just laughing when everything goes everywhere. So I didn't pick up when they called me back. Did not want anything to do with that place. Another guy that I worked with, that same executive chef when I worked at the butcher shop was the next place I had a job at. He came in clearly, like, fucked up and had, like, two of, like, the girls who are like fours and also very fucked up, and they come in and, like, I recognize him. He doesn't recognize me, and he just, like, slurring and talking to me, and he keeps, like, asking for samples of stuff, and, like, he's eating prosciutto like he's Yoshi, just like. I don't know. I would say the name of the restaurant if I remembered what it was and tell you not to go there, but I don't remember what the name of it was. It's in Alexandria. It has a little. Old-fashioned, like, sconce outside of it. That's all I can tell you.
Is it...
And it's one name. It's just one word.
Oh, shit. I was going to say, is it Rabbit Innards Supply Depot? It's a
Crab
warehouse.
Smashes and yeah. Rabbit Innards Depot.
The description of the head, the executive chef smashing the crab, it's like, it sounds like you worked with the Swedish chef. That's what it sounds like.
Like a very stoned,
yeah,
kind of bug-eyed, but, like, half slanted over, like... Yeah.
Were these cartoonish crabs? Did it seem like they had a like lively
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Yeah. He was like smashing cartoon crabs. He's got the judge glasses on.
Your favorite work story that I have heard is from the same place. It's from the same place where you had to procure a doctor's note each time. And that is the was it a ham sandwich world tour?
Oh, God.
Oh my God, I love this story.
Because, like, well, one, like, they have a policy about people with culinary degrees. Like, they start at, that's what she really wanted. She wanted to fully staff her kitchen with people with culinary degrees. So I was the first
that
one
of this
thing. No.
It's not good?
Anybody with a degree
yeah.
that could go basically anywhere else in our smallish town. Like, no one's going to stay there for long. Nobody.
Okay. All right.
So, like, you know, I started at a higher rate. I thought everything was going to be good. But, like, she still, I don't think she believed me. Like when she hired Jason on, like, Jason didn't have to, like, prove his resume to her, but I did. I had to bring in, like, my diploma that's up there on the wall, so she had to come in and photocopy it, and the girl had to
that's
take a picture
poster,
of it.
That's an oatmeal poster, Tyler.
No, that's from Sriracha Oatmeal University. And then, like, but she also, one day, she wanted to make sure, like, she had a certain way she wanted a ham sandwich made. So she had the kitchen manager take me outside.
Yeah.
To, like, so we had a hotline set up outside.
A hotline?
Or not outside, but in the ruined, like, all the tables. It wasn't a cafeteria, but a large room.
Is that a weird drug thing?
The hotline is just where, like, all the hot food is.
Okay.
Like,
it's not a 900 number.
The hotline. It's just, like, steam wells where we put all, like, the hot food and shit like that. So I'm out there, and the kitchen manager's like, I need you to make me a ham sandwich. And, like, I look at her, and she's like, I know. I know. I've been here for, like, 27 years. Trust me, I know.
How did you understand her with the gun in her mouth?
But she's like, just try it as neatly as you can to make a ham sandwich. So I did. So I know she's very particular about what goes on it and the order in which it goes on.
Okay.
So I had to do, you know.
Whoa, is this a trade secret? Can we be sued if you reveal how the ham sandwich is made?
I don't know. I'm willing to risk it. Two pieces of white bread.
Two pieces of bread.
Two pieces of white bread. Wheat, if they request it, but don't bring it out.
Okay. More expensive.
Two pieces of white bread. Maybe. I don't know. It can't be, but fuck. And then, so I had the cheese on one side.
Okay.
Ham.
What kind of cheese?
The very cheap.
Orange slices.
Government cheese. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Orange slice. Orange slice on one side. And then two folded up pieces of, like, they had, like, the square industrial ham. So two pieces of that folded up to
industrial
line up on the bread.
Ham.
Like the, like, you go to Walmart, you have, like, the deli ham, and then you have, like, the Oscar Mayer ham in the plastic, and at the bottom is, like, the, like, 800 pieces of ham jammed in, like, a sealed, vacuum-sealed container.
I'm going to have to look for that. Sounds like I'm going to have to buy that.
So it's that ham.
Okay.
And I had to fold each of those ham pieces, which this I just did, because I did this at home.
All right.
So I had to fold them in half, then put them on so it doesn't fall over the bread.
But Tyler, people love it when the meat goes over the bun.
That's just hamburgers. That's just hamburgers when the meat hangs off the bun. I was told another way to do BLTs, because we had to do BLTs in such a way that the bacon hung off the edges so people would think they had more bacon than was actually on the sandwich.
Cool, very cool.
Yeah. So the ham on one side, cheese on the other, then the lettuce, and then the tomato, and then the cheese and the bread on top.
Cheese and bread on top. Any kind of mustard or mayo?
They put that on themselves.
Okay.
Or the nurse aides will put that on for them.
Okay.
So that, and then cut it in half.
Diagonally?
Into triangles.
I mean, I'm a big diagonal fan. You know me.
Into triangles. And I gave it to the kitchen manager, who looked at it and was like, I think that'll work. And the kitchen. And
you have a degree. You have a degree.
Made a fucking ham sandwich.
This is where I love this story.
Which the thing
so
was
much.
Like the tomato needed to go between.
God.
The tomato couldn't touch the bread because it would make the bread soggy.
I've seen
that. That's the only part of it that I agree with.
Look, everyone's seen that episode of Good Eats. You know your tomato can't touch the bread. That shit's gonna disintegrate.
And your pickles.
Yeah.
So she takes it. She takes it to the owner, who inspects it, opens it up, makes sure everything is the way she wants it. She comes out to me, and only time she's ever complimented me, she was like,
nice butt.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then she's like, come with me. And then I have to stand behind her while she then goes to everyone else in the kitchen, except Jason, showing them, Tyler made this ham sandwich. This is how I want ham sandwiches made. Most of which don't make ham sandwiches. But they had to know in case of a ham sandwich emergency.
Yeah. Well, what happens if you're busy shitting in a Ready Aid? Someone's going to have to fucking make that shit.
Oh, man.
I love that story so much. That is my favorite work story of yours.
And people who are on Coumadin are, they're particular to, it's a heart, medication.
Thing? Okay.
I think it's vitamin K or something like that, they have to regulate really carefully.
I know that's a drug reference.
Yeah, it's my dad drug
ketamine,
reference.
Ketamine, right?
So anyone on Coumadin couldn't have, like, dark green leafy vegetables.
Okay.
So I had to, you know, I get, like, each person's card that has their diet and stuff like that on it, so I have to make sure they don't get certain things.
Okay. Light greens, okay?
Like, if they could have a salad with an iceberg lettuce. Okay. Any other kind of lettuce, no. Or they can't have broccoli, they can't have Brussels
spinach
sprouts.
Spinach straight out.
Spinach, okay. No. Yep. So one, but if they insist on it, if they throw a fit about it and they want it, you have to give it to them.
Really?
Because you can't, it's a whole thing about denial of rights. So you can't take, if they want to eat something, you can't take the rights away from them. It's hard to understand because, like, I know there's a disease that like where people don't feel full, so they will eat until they get sick.
Yeah.
So like even if someone has that disease, like you can't keep food out of their reach. They have to still have access to all the food that they want to eat.
I think that's like Roman Emperor's disease, right?
Yeah. Caligula disease.
Caligula disease.
You eat and then you just fuck all your family all day long.
Woo.
So it's like where I would be like, well, then, you know, only give them a certain amount because they'll just get sick. But right. No, you can't do that. That's taking away their right to eat.
Time to grab the industrial ham.
So like there's one woman who was just like, oh, she was so fucking mean all the time. No matter what, she was never happy. And I remember one time she thought she didn't like the garlic bread that I made her. So like she's at the table, like she's at a table really close to me at the hotline, and like
I know what that is now. She did all the hot food.
There you go, you get it. You know what's going on. And like I'm working and I see her waving. So I look up, which I'm not supposed to interact with them anyway. Cause like for insurance reasons, I can't like touch them. I can talk to them, but I can't really do anything for them. Like if one's about to fall down,
yeah,
I just have to let them fall.
Really?
I can't touch
really?
Them. Cannot touch them.
Oh man.
So
that's weird.
Yeah.
I don't think I can let someone just fall in front of me.
No, you're probably going to die. Oh, sorry. But she gets my attention and I look at her and just like maintaining eye contact. She holds her bread out to the side and drops it on the ground.
Like a microphone?
Yeah, like a microphone. Just like maintaining eye contact with me.
The deaf breadstick jam?
Nope. And then, like, she can't have broccoli.
Okay.
The other people at her table can have broccoli. All
right.
So I try to compensate by giving her a little extra of, like, something else.
Trying to kill her with kindness.
Yeah, make her at least try to feel equal because she can't have the broccoli.
Probably shouldn't use the word kill in retirement home situation.
Literally kill her with kindness. And so like one day it's like broccoli day. Everyone gets broccoli.
Oh boy.
Everybody gets broccoli on their plates.
I can't wait till I'm in a retirement home.
Broccoli day.
I can't wait for broccoli day. Thinking back on the good old Tadpog glory days.
But so she gets her plate with more stuff on it. And she just has the most sour expression. And she like pulls down a nurse aide and like yells in their ear. And they come up. She would like some broccoli. I was like, she's no dark green leafy vegetables. Like, doesn't matter. She wants some broccoli. Like, okay. So I grab a bowl.
Yeah.
I put some broccoli in it. Take it over there to her. They give it to her. And she looks at it and knocks it over.
Like a cat?
Yeah. Just knocks it over. And then, like, I hear her, she looks at an earth aid and says something else, and then comes back to me. It didn't look like everybody else's broccoli, because it was in a bowl.
Okay.
She does not want her broccoli.
All right.
Fine!
All right. I mean, she's got a point.
And I swear, like, now this part was almost a game, because hamburger day.
Is this this lady again?
This lady again.
All right.
Hamburger day. She wanted onions on her hamburger.
Okay.
So like
onions are great on a hamburger. I get it.
I give like normally I'd put like 3 rings of onion on a hamburger when I send it out. But she wanted I put them on, sent it to her, came back, she wants more onion.
Okay.
3 more rings, put them down,
double,
send it out.
Double onions.
Come back again. She wants more onion.
Wow.
We go through this like I swear to God, 3 or 4 more times. You can see like the onion is visibly 2 inches above her actual burger.
All right.
And she takes like a few bites and then goes and just leaves. And it was that exact same thing every single time we had hamburgers. Like I had to take like most of an onion and just put it on her hamburger. Just because, I guess because she just knew I had to do it if she said it.
I have a prediction.
Yeah.
In 5 years, you're going to stumble upon a time machine. And you're going to go back 60 years. And when you're enjoying the past, you're taking it all in, you're accidentally going to push a young girl into a puddle of mud.
Or into a train.
And she'll grow up remembering that, and then she'll see you and hold this grudge against you forever.
I only got called a motherfucker once.
Wow. You got called a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
By that lady?
Another older lady who came up. Like, I was in the...
You're everyone's favorite, aren't you?
Yeah. I had gone to the bathroom, and I was walking back to the kitchen, and this one lady stops me.
Yeah.
It's like... And she has, like, her crew with her of other old ladies.
Okay.
She's like,
Were you intimidated?
Yeah, but thoroughly.
Yeah,
these, I mean, you're like the these like the Jets.
Yeah.
Of the old lady community. And
I get
she's
it.
Like, hey, what's the best way to get out of here? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know. And she turns around. This motherfucker doesn't know anything anyway. Okay, I'll go make you a ham sandwich. Yeah.
You know, it would have been great if you had a weapon on you. Because I feel like that would have been a good, like, I know one way out of here. And then you draw the weapon. I don't know what you do after that. See how hard she is then. I like to think that story ends with, like, I mean, I love you, but it ends with your mangled corpse. And
in a big old bucket. With chains and brass knuckles.
In a big bucket full of rabbit innards. What's up, internet? I am Dave. I'm your bespectacled host.
That took 30 minutes.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wasn't going to fucking stop you. And, man, you're talking about places that you didn't like to work. I was trying to. I was really trying to think of something that might have happened. I remember when my very first job, I've mentioned this on the show, I worked at the Olive Garden. I was a busboy, and sometimes I got to make the garlic bread. I like to think that the woman at the retirement home you worked at would have loved my garlic bread, or it would have killed her, one or the other, because I made it very short.
Either way, I'm sure she would have been better off, been fine.
But man, there's like, when you were talking about coming into Pizza Hut and doing like those menial tasks, fucking love doing that shit. Like that's, like, I don't know what it is about me. I'm like, I'm super task oriented. Like I love like coming into work and be like, these are the fucking things I got to do today. I got to do these things. As long as I do these things, I'm not going to get fired.
You would love being a prep cook.
Well, I mean, it's not too late, right?
It's just not. If you want to take a huge pay cut, it's
not
too late.
I doubt it. So, I mean, one of my favorite things to do at Olive Garden was roll silverware. I don't know if I've talked about this, but when you were talking about menial tasks, that's the first thing I thought of. Because, I mean, here's the thing. Bussing tables is a really shitty job. Like, and I'm not like trying to say if you're listening to this and you're bussing tables that you're a shitty person. But
the job itself,
that job,
yeah,
sucks. I know because I've done it. It fucking sucks because it's like no one gives a shit about the food they leave and like the condition they leave a table in. They just don't.
People who are like, oh god, at Chong's when people we have like a dish of sweet and sour chicken, they didn't want it, so I open it up and people just put cigarettes out in it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, I mean that's and it's like the amount of food that would come that I'd have to clean up with like cigarette butts in it is ridiculous. And always, there's always someone who's like, well, I didn't really want this pasta. I know what I'll do with it. Floor. And then one time, I thought of the Seinfeld episode where Jerry just wants to eat a salad and his girlfriend has made mutton and he's squirreling it away in a napkin and hiding it in the couch. I can't tell you how many times I've found napkins with chewed up fucking food in it, just stuffed into the fucking seat. Like, people be gross, Tyler. People be gross. And, man, so, of course, I wanted to not do that, and I'd rather roll silverware. So that was my big thing. I love rolling silverware. And on Sunday mornings, that was the prime rolling silverware time. Because it's, you know,
You got that after church crowd.
It's before the church crowd. You're getting ready for the church crowd, so you need lots of silverware. You got to have silverware. So you're sitting there rolling it, and I rolled an entire bin. That's the deal. Like, it was full. You get a bin, right? It's full of silverware. You got another bin. It's full of fucking napkins. It's not rocket science. You take a fork and a knife. You put it in the fucking napkin, and you roll that motherfucker up.
No spoon. Just fork and knife.
And you put it in. You put it in a third bin. It's a three-bin process, Tyler. Three-bin process. I remember I was back there with a bunch of servers. I was the only guy, I guess, bussing at that shift. And the servers were always older because I was like 15 years old. This is my very first job. The only reason I didn't want this job. But I wanted a car, and I was going to be getting a car when I was 16. I wanted to be able to have a car, and that was kind of the deal. I had to my dad was kind enough to match whatever money I saved for a car. So that was extremely generous of him. But in order to get money, I had to actually work.
I got $5.
Right, exactly. I would have got a $10 car. My dad's very strict about that. And that's not a joke. I remember being back there, and I was like just rolling the silverware. And the servers are older, of course. So and I'm younger and I feel like I gotta impress them. I don't want to be the dorky kid who works there. So of course what I do to impress him is just roll the silverware as fast as I can, because I mean, who isn't going to be impressed by that? No one fucking notices, but it turns out I roll a shitload of silverware and I'm done. And the restaurant doesn't open for like 15 more minutes. And I remember one of the servers, they were like just fucking reading the newspaper, just waiting for the store to open, mm-hmm. reading the newspaper. And I was just kind of sitting there. I was done with my task. And I remember one of the servers was like, here, and handed me the comic section. I was like, fuck yes, comics, comic section.
It's still the first place I go and open a newspaper.
Yeah, of course. Because
you're the only thing I read in a newspaper.
Because you're an endearing person, of course. I mean, it's the same with me. I get it. And I remember this clear as day. The manager for that shift was also back there reading the newspaper and cutting up with mm-hmm. the servers. The general manager was there that day. And I remember the moment I opened the fucking comics section, this douchebag motherfucker was like, by the way, he was like 7 foot tall and like... He was fucking Bricktop from Snatch is essentially who he was. As soon as I fucking opened that, I got the, I don't pay you to read the fucking comics.
Oh, fuck,
and
man.
I was mortified. I was totally embarrassed because, like, he said it in front of everybody. And then, of course, the fucking...
He doesn't pay you a fucking dime, first of all.
Right, yeah. And the manager for the shift that day, of course... ran with it. Was just like, she didn't want to get in fucking trouble. So she's like, yeah, what are you doing? And I'm like, you were there. You saw this happen. And it was just, get back to work, where I just got up, left, and just stood somewhere until the restaurant opened because I had nothing to do.
Oh, God. So that's the kind of shit that, like, I don't understand why people in the restaurant industry, why they act like that. I think it's people that are just... shitty. It's like any other business situation. They're shitty, and you just want to get them away, promote them so they are somewhere else.
And it's not just restaurants. I can tell you that. Ugh. Like, there's shitty people like that pretty much everywhere, I think. That actually wasn't what I had prepared.
But, like, if that happened to me, like, now, like, if for some reason I had to be a busboy now, that should happen to me, I'd be like, have fun busting your tables on Sunday rush. Fuck off.
Well.
I'll walk across the street to Red Lobster and just work there. See ya.
To one of the other fine Durden restaurants. I think it's I think it's a Durden restaurant. Can't remember. I might be conflating that with Fight Club. I don't know. But
Darden.
Thank you. I had something else prepared today. I wanted to do was, you remember I brought wrap snacks one time.
Uh-huh.
You remember I brought wrap snacks, and then sometimes I like to bring things.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I brought the wonderful cards that Zach sent.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else sent me something.
All right.
This might not be a surprise because he may have told you. Henry, my 7-month-old son, mm-hmm. received a package in the mail from Oathbreaker.
Oh,
Blake Woods. Do you know about this? He told you. I was hoping I could surprise you.
He asked me if I thought it would be a good idea.
Oh, well, I mean.
I was like, yeah.
Of course it's a good idea.
Do it.
Well, can you act surprised? Can you at least act surprised? Give me your best, like, you didn't unwrap the Christmas presents the night before.
Okay.
So I got the package. Henry got the package. And I was like, okay, well, I'll open this up. And what was inside, boom.
Oh, shit.
That's good. That's bad to the bone, Ghost.
That's good.
That's bad. That's a Tadpog deep cut.
Where's Kenneth's present, Blake? I don't get anything in the mail. We bought Owen those whole cans. Where's Kenneth's present, Blake?
You bought him whole cans?
Whole cans. We bought him whole cans of tomatoes.
We didn't even open and eat nothing. We bought him those whole cans.
See, now that you have that, now that I actually see it, I remember that toy now.
I don't have it. This isn't mine. This is Henry's.
Now you have Henry's toy. I remember seeing that.
But it's a choking hazard, so I'm going to hold on to it for him until he's able to play with it, because I'm not an unsafe father. So I wanted to thank Oathbreaker for sending that, and then I forgive him for not getting us a million Facebook likes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Ghostbusters toy, the Bad to the Bone Ghost, that I wanted as a kid and did not get for Christmas. And see what happens is his rib cage opens.
Yeah.
This is a classic Dave Good Radio segment. his rib cage opens. The Ghostbuster goes inside, and his head goes there, and his eyes pop out.
See it. It's pretty good.
It's a pretty good toy. I don't know why his legs are like a mermaid's tail, kind of. I don't know what's going on with that. It's like they had a good idea for a toy, and they made half of it, and then they were just like, I don't know what to do with the bottom.
We're over budget for legs. fuck. Just make. We have extra spines. Yeah. Just throw them on
just
there.
Just put them, on there. Yeah. So, thank you. I thought making this a segment would also incentivize people to send us more shit. So
more Ghostbuster toys for our children.
He sent another one to me that I don't know the name of. I'm sorry. He sent another one to Henry. I don't remember the name of, but it you might remember the toy. It's like a translucent green blob with a bunch of teeth, but essentially all it is an egg that opens up. And I recall, I believe that there was slime inside of this thing at one point that you would slime a Ghostbuster with, because that's what you did.
So he got Henry multiple toys. Okay.
Two toys. All right. Two toys. And no whole cans either. No green beans, no tomatoes, nothing.
Dave, you want to talk about Perfect Dark for a little bit?
Not really. I can tell you want to, though, because you did that thing. You did that thing where you looked at the time and you were like, 42 minutes?
Yeah, we're 42 minutes in.
So, I mean, it's not outside of reason to think that we've been stalling to talk about Perfect Dark, is it?
No. No, I had a lot of job stuff I had to get off my chest.
Yeah.
And you had to share your wonderful presence. Look, so it's fine.
I don't think we have to spell it out, but for me, this podcast is therapy pretty much. I don't go to a therapist. I need to. Yeah. But so instead of that, I do this. So I mean, it keeps the bees out of my mouth. I mean, you said it.
You internalize your issues into rage pretty well.
That's fine. I am a good rage engine.
Every 10 years you have to just explode a little bit, hold Zach into some boxes, and then it's fine.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's been about 10 years ago, so we're probably coming up with another one.
Yeah, we're due for another fit of rage. No, I kicked that
Come Coke, back from Korea, Zach.
I kicked that Coke Zero box around, remember?
No, that's
when I was
true.
Playing Dark Souls.
That's pretty good.
That's probably good.
Or Professor Layton was the Coke box, right?
Oh, no. I returned to the Coke box for Professor Layton. Okay. That was the return of Coke box. First time was Dark Souls. I think Nikki was, I don't know how she managed to sit on the couch next to me for that long. I was radiating hate waves. So yeah, Perfect Dark. Let's do it.
Do you hear that, Dave?
Nope. I don't know. What is it? Oh, wait. I'm sorry. That's bad improv.
It's us.
Yeah, I do. I sure do. It's the man, this job sure is not great. Train.
We've been stalling for a while, train. Full of jobs and breadsticks and... Oh, and I guess while you look that up...
Look what
the way
up.
You were talking about rolling silverware, I remember people at Cracker Barrel specifically, like they treated the act of rolling silverware like cigarettes.
Like cigarettes?
Like
they would roll them up and then they'd puff on them?
I will do this for you if you roll 30 things of silverware for me. I will do this for you if you do the 60 I have to do tomorrow.
I don't think you know how cigarettes
trade
work.
Trade it back at work. Break it, in prison.
Oh, I gotcha. Butt cigarettes is what
butt
you mean.
Cigarettes.
All right, guys. Of course I know that train. That Stalin train. Or Stalin train. It's a Soviet train. Mm-hmm. Stalin train. Which, of course, ushers in a segment that we like to call Dave Reads from Wikipedia. Okay, guys. Perfect Dark is a first-person shooter video game developed by Rare. This is just the top 25 Rare games I think we're doing.
Yeah.
For the Nintendo 64 video game console, it is considered the spiritual successor to Rare's earlier first-person shooter, GoldenEye 007. I'm sorry, 007, with which it shares many gameplay features. Perfect Dark was first released in North America on May 22nd, 2000. The year 2000. This game came out in 2000.
Tyler, year you graduated.
Year I graduated. Came out in 2000. Don't feel like... That's pretty old, but I don't feel like that's really old.
It's not really... It's not super old.
A separate...
Nicole was only like 4.
Yeah.
So,
it can't be that long ago. A separate Game Boy Color game, also titled Perfect Dark, was released in August 2000 as a supplement to the game and allows certain features within the Nintendo 64 game to alternatively be unlocked via a transfer pack. The game, Tyler, features a single-player mode consisting of 17 main missions in which the player assumes the role of Carrington Institute agent Joanna Dark as she attempts to stop a conspiracy by a rival corporation, Datadyne. It also features a range of multiplayer options, including a cooperative mode and traditional deathmatch settings. Technically, it is one of the most advanced games developed for the Nintendo 64, with optional high-resolution graphics and Dolby surround sound. A Nintendo 64 expansion pack is required to access the game's campaign and most of the multiplayer features. It goes on, and there's another paragraph, but I'm done. You want me to read it?
No, it's okay.
Yeah, we're good.
It's okay. Like, one, the expansion pack. I mean, I understand the need. It was necessary to keep
up.
But it's...
What is it?
It's
Let's explain what it is.
It's extra RAM that's required to run a lot of the games because the N60 hardware is so fucking gimped in comparison to PlayStation and, what, Sega Saturn? Is that what the other out of the time? So
sure.
So it just... And it pisses me off. Like, I feel like if they're going to gimp their hardware and then make games that require additional hardware, like, they should have just given it or made it severely discounted as opposed to, like, $30-$40 that you'd have before you could play this $60 game you just bought.
Yeah.
You get something else first.
I think that the expansion pack was included in Donkey Kong, the Donkey Kong game for the N64. Okay. I can't remember if it's Donkey Kong 64 or if it's called Donkey Kong Country 64. It came with that. I don't know if that game was more expensive because it was included. Mm. It probably was, but I think that was the first N64 game, also a Rare game, that required the expansion pack for you to play it.
Okay, and the more we play of these games, I just have to wonder, like, people praise Rare so much for just, they can do no wrong, they make all of these games, like, is it really that they just, like, made this otherworldly high quality kind of game, or did they just have like exclusive access to developer tools for this new 3D software? Is this like, I feel like it's got to be something like that. I don't see how Rare can continue to dominate if they haven't cornered the market in some way.
They were an exclusive developer for Nintendo, right? I mean, they didn't develop for anybody else, as far as I know.
Not that I remember, not until their Microsoft bought them,
right?
But
which was considerably later than the N64.
Yeah, like 360 days.
So, I mean, yeah, I think, honestly, I don't know because I wasn't really reading up on the game industry when the N64 was out. But yeah. I have a feeling it was one of those things where it's real similar to right now, where it's like third-party developers probably saw the PlayStation and they're like, oh, wow, we can do a lot with this hardware. We can make some real interesting
CDs. Cool.
Games.
That sounds like that's the next thing. Yeah. All right.
Did you read the article about the guy who found a prototype SNES CD in his attic?
No.
Yeah, his dad was one of the developers on that system.
Oh man.
And when it was scrapped, just fucking took it. He just fucking took it from the prototyping department and just squirreled it away in his attic.
Oh man.
They're estimating that it could be worth like $20,000, something like that. $20,000-$30,000.
Fucking A.
Yeah. And it lacks a power cord, so he hasn't tried it yet. But what's most interesting is I think there's like a handful of CDs that no one knows what's on there. So that's like the interesting thing.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. Oh well, Perfect Dark.
Perfect
Dark.
Let's just talk about more different stuff.
All right. All right, that's fine. Love the Perfect Dark. Because they're basically like the sequel to GoldenEye was supposedly pretty bad. I don't think I've ever even played it. I just remember GoldenEye was a huge deal back in the day. It's higher on this list. We'll get to it eventually. But one thing about GoldenEye, I'll say now, since this is basically like, I think Rare realized, okay, we fucked up on GoldenEye. Let's just do what we should have done.
You think that they
fucked up on the second GoldenEye?
Oh, okay.
It wasn't as good. So they, okay, well, let's do it right. And they made Perfect Dark. So the thing I could not stand, I loved GoldenEye multiplayer. Played that forever. Loved it. Fucking hated the single player. Despised the single player. I thought it was just glitchy, and I hated it. I had no attachment to 007. The first James Bond movie I ever saw was Skyfall with Daniel Craig. I had never seen a James Bond before that. So like,
I've never seen one start to finish.
This game was my first like, oh, okay, that's a thing. All right, people seem to like this. Mm-hmm. Pierce Brosnan, all right, sure. And
Mars Attacks, yeah, we get it.
Yeah, it's fine. And like, yeah, I was all about the multiplayer. Couldn't send the single player. So I feel like on this, they took the... Maybe what, because I think I hear the multiplayer for GoldenEye was just added on at the end. Like, just, it's just lightning just happened to strike. So then they took what this discovery that they found and then actually did it right and fully fleshed it out for Perfect Dark. So playing through it.
Perfect Dark.
Now, Perfect Dark. Okay. It's hard to play. It's hard to play now.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate the experience. And I could see, like, if I had played Perfect Dark back when it came out, I would have fucking loved it.
Really?
I would have absolutely loved this game. But now it's just like, whew, there's really no going back.
I hated it.
Yeah.
Like, I just straight up hated the game. When I turned it on, I was really impressed with the logos. The Nintendo logo and the Rare logo are rendered extremely well. I mean, it was like, I turned it on and I was like, damn, this expansion pack's really kicking in. Holy shit. And I was like, when did this game come out? 2000? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, of course it would look better than some of these games that we're playing that were made much earlier. Great. Mm-hmm. Then the game starts and it's the longest fucking title screen ever. It's long. It's like nothing's happening, but the words Perfect Dark, the Perfect Dark logo is slowly scrolling to the left. Just slowly scrolling.
No, put that in PowerPoint. No, speed, yeah, like.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
no, no, make it slow.
Yeah, Clippy pops up. I see you're trying to make a title screen for a game. I suggest you make it 4 minutes long of the logo scrolling across. And it's like these like screen dots are like coming in and out. And then like these trippy effects are going on. And this really epic music. I mean, okay, fine. Start. Okay, we're done. We're skipping that. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay, I know what game I'm playing. Great. I didn't think the game looked good. I didn't think the game looked good at all. Yeah. And it was like just blocks going and shooting other blocks. And I've never been, I'm going to throw this out here. I've thrown this out there before. Mm-hmm. Anyone who truly knows me knows that I think that the PC is where first person shooters belong. Like it's mouse and keyboard. It just is mouse and keyboard.
I think dual sticks are acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
I think they're acceptable, and like I've played first person shooters on the PlayStation 3, and it's fine. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Whenever I do it, I'm like, this is okay, but I'm always in the back of my mind, it's like, but I would be doing much better if I had a mouse and a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And that's just I feel like at that point that's a personal preference. I really do.
The first time I played through Fallout 3, I did it on the PlayStation 3. And then when I played through New Vegas on the PS3, and then I bought Steam had the Ultimate Edition for like $6. So I bought that and I played through New Vegas again on the PC. And I do agree with you. It was a much better experience with a mouse and a keyboard.
I just feel like it's easier. It's just more intuitive because all you use a fucking cursor for when you're using a computer is to point at things and click on those things that you need. So like the transition to like, oh, okay, instead of a cursor, I'm going to use the mouse to point a fucking gun at something. And instead of clicking on a file, I'm going to click it to kill a dude. I feel like that's natural. It's intuitive where it's getting better on consoles. But like at this point, it was not there. It wasn't there at all.
Yeah, man. The N64 controller is already so fucked up, in my opinion. And trying to do a good first-person shooter on it was just... I mean, I guess I understand, like, I never could really get into, like, Doom and stuff like that. Like, there are a lot of traits. There are a lot of things from... Like, I still, like, one, music on Perfect Dark. Fantastic.
I love it.
I still think it's fantastic.
I've actually got that in my notes. I know you're planning on running some Shadowrun in the future. I recommend you use some of the Perfect Dark soundtrack.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Because, I mean, it sounds like it sounds like it belongs in a Shadowrun game.
Some of it sounds like Mass Effect stole from it.
Yeah.
Like, it's that quality. Like,
yeah, it's
the
great.
Stuff from a Mass Effect game.
I agree with you.
Really
I love
good.
The music. It's got this, like, it's really cool because it's got that, like, what we thought the future would sound like. when we were in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's, and it's like, I love that sound because it's different than anything else.
It appeals to that science fiction part of you. Like, yeah, that association is so strong. Like, yeah, I hear that and I'm in that mindset. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm there.
Absolutely.
So like, and like the ambiance, what you're doing in Perfect Dark, fine. You know, I'm on board. The story, this looks fine. When they say perfect dark, they mean dark because the lighting is terrible. But anyway,
it's hard to see. It really is hard to see.
I forget what I was saying. I was trying to preface some good stuff before I said something bad.
You want me to go? Want me to do some good stuff?
The fact that you can't, one, like, all right, you can't, like, looking up and down is horrible. You have to use your C sticks to try and do it, and it's,
yeah, the C buttons,
completely off. Like, you have to take your hand, finger off the joystick onto the C button. And then, like, where I would have, like, I was pressing L and R thinking, yeah, that's the natural place to shoot. Nope. You got to use the trigger on the back, which I forgot the trigger even existed, right, which I guess, you know, that makes sense. But nothing about, like, holding the joystick and then, like, the A and B button so close together, and you have to move, do the C sticks, yeah, and then you have, it was terrible. And you can't jump.
There, like, is, I, no, feel, jump. Like, it's just not in the game.
And, like, I run up to, like, I can see like a platform like right below me. I should be able just to jump over this. No, you can't jump. So you have to find this weird way around stuff, and there's no map.
I never knew where I was going in this game.
Oh man.
I think that is a problem of early first person shooters. Mm-hmm. I will say that, man, I do feel like in 2000, there have been so many first person shooters that were really, really good.
When did Quake come out? I know Doom was out way before this, but like,
Quake came out in 1996.
What about Unreal Tournament then?
1998.
Well, then it's inexcusable for a lot of the shit that was left out.
Tyler, I've got a list of games that came out. I got a list of first-person shooters that came out before Perfect Dark. Would you like to hear these?
Yes.
This does not include the sprite-based first-person shooters like Wolfenstein 3D, Doom, Heretic, Duke Nukem 3D. Those are out because it's different. Those were not 3D first-person shooters like Perfect Dark is.
Yeah.
But the ones that were modeled in 3D before Perfect Dark: Descent, Quake, GoldenEye, of course, Quake 2, the first Rainbow Six, Half-Life, Medal of Honor, Quake 3 Arena, Unreal Tournament, Counter-Strike, all came out before Perfect Dark. Guess when Halo came out, Tyler? Guess when Halo came out?
2000?
2001, a year after Perfect Dark.
Oh, man.
The most iconic first-person shooter for a console came out. Like, all of those. Here's my point. This is not a great game because all of those games that I fucking mentioned are in this genre and are so much better than Perfect Dark. Every single one of those.
That does put it into perspective, 100%. Yeah.
I get it. I get that on an N64, like a list of N64 games, okay, maybe this belongs on there. Because from what I've played, they're not great. There's not a lot of options there.
Yeah.
And I get wanting to have a mix of genres, and we haven't really done a first-person shooter on there. But man, this was a completely unenjoyable experience for me. And it's one of those, it goes back to what I was talking about, we were both talking about, on Banjo-Tooie. I do feel like if this was a game that I played when it came out, multiplayer, with three other people, I would have vastly different feelings for this game, because I could see doing multiplayer, long nights, forming very fond memories of this game. But like, as someone who's completely outside of that, trying to look into that, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah,
it does not hold up for me. And I honestly can say this with all honesty. I think that a lot of those games that I mentioned, Counter-Strike in particular, hold up.
Yeah. I mean, Counter-Strike and Half-Life are really good arguments about, like, what the fuck's going on here? Especially, and that Quake 3 was already by this point.
Yeah.
Because, like, Quake was the first, like, Quake and Duke Nukem 3D were the first, like, first-person shooters that really got me hooked into the genre.
Quake was my big one. It really was. I played Wolfenstein 3D and all that before it, but Quake was, wow.
I loved Quake. Shake and I would play Quake. Oh, God, we loved Quake. And then, like, I remember I was so excited about Unreal Tournament. I was like, yeah, I'm going to love this too. No, I hated Unreal Tournament just because, like, the single player was not great. I tried to log into multiplayer. Yeah. That was my first experience of, like, log in, dead. Log in again, dead. Log in, take two shots, dead.
Yeah.
That was my experience. I put about 2 weeks of me trying to play this game, and I couldn't play it, so I quit it forever.
And that's the only thing that was good about Unreal Tournament, I thought, was the multiplayer. Because I agree, the single player was...
It's in the title, so...
Right.
So that's... You're right, man. That does... That really, really puts it in perspective.
So it's hard, because like what I wanted to do was... I used to be a huge fan of this genre. Mm-hmm. And honestly, before I started playing Ultima Online, first-person shooters was my thing. Mm-hmm. That's what we would all play at Apex. We essentially had a 24/7 LAN party going on at all times. Where we play Quake 2, Rail Arena. We did Quake 3 for a bit. We did Unreal Tournament for a bit. And then we did Counter-Strike for a very long time. And granted, I do have nostalgic ties to those games. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to say that I can take a step back and objectively say, man, those games were just better made than Perfect Dark was. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of it has to be the limitations of the N64. And I know that I keep going back to that. But the limitations of that hardware, wow, really hamstrings the games.
And that's like Nintendo, like I kind of feel like they just happened to get it right with GoldenEye. It just happened to happen. So I guess like they try to figure it out and they just don't have the they don't have the system to make Perfect Dark the way I imagine they wanted it to come out. It does have a lot of cool stuff about it that make it stand out in the N64's library.
Yeah.
Like the catalog of weapons is enormous.
Yeah.
The multiplayer, the cool thing where you can pick you're on one side and you can do co-op, not really co-op, but versus mode where somebody is an enemy on the other side and you're sort of hunting each other down throughout the levels.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
You played Agent Dark and I played Random Minion.
Yeah.
And what's cool about that is you can still go through the story. I've never seen a mode like that. That's really cool. I like that. And if you killed me as a minion, I just spawned in another minion. It makes it really hard, I think, on the person playing the agent because, I mean, let's face it, the AI in this game is pretty dumb.
Yeah.
And this is how I got – you saw me. This is how I got to the game. Okay. Aiming up and down, that ain't – just not going
to
happen.
Yeah, you just have to – you get to rush up on people.
So I can't jump. I'm going to treat this – essentially, I'm going to treat this like Wolfenstein 3D where I just aim straight. And all I do is just move my body. No up and down. I just forget that that's there. And exactly what I do is
you're playing Doom and you have the chainsaw.
Yeah. I just rush at people with a gun. And then like I run up, smash my body into the guy I want to shoot, pull the trigger. Run to the next guy, smash my body into him, pull the trigger. Cuz otherwise I feel like I couldn't really hit anybody.
Yeah, you know you're right cuz it just I'm trying to even think like I feel like, I guess they pulled that joystick so hard, but I feel like this would have been better controlled if they had tried to emulate dual sticks with the D-pad and the C buttons and then using L and R. Because you can also, you can pull up, you got your single pistol, of course you're unarmed, you can dual wield.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like all this is really cool.
A lot of good elements are there, but it's just like... Actually having to play it, like what I had a decent time with it. I sat down and I got through it. Here's just to say, we're not talking about it in communication about what we're doing. Me, you, and Paul Kluhl all get to about the same area and then all say fuck it. Because it's just like you get your objectives, but there's no like your objectives don't update as like you have to go through and like get passwords or key cards.
Right.
And my problem with futuristic games is they just make all the hallways and stuff look the same.
Yeah, so, just computers. Just computers
just
in the
computers.
Wall. Yeah.
Yeah, same, like everything's like gray.
Well, another problem with that is when you're not clear what the objective is, now I'm checking all the computers on the wall.
And you can't
check
anything.
Because I'm in an unfamiliar environment. It's
anything.
Like, I need a password. Maybe it's on one of these 5,000 computers on the wall.
And 99% of those computers do nothing.
Nothing.
But
they're just texture.
Some of them do, and you have to put in a passcode.
Yeah.
And then,
I do want this game has made me want a new screensaver because every computer had. Did you notice they had the monochromatic green? For some reason, we've gone back. It's the future, it's but like we've gone back.
It's like the tech in the original Alien, whenever they're putting stuff.
Our Star Wars, right? Where like in the prequel, the tech's so much better than the tech they had in the original movies. But whatever.
Well, the Naboo Starfighter, man. That was the best fucking ship.
They have, I want this screensaver, like all the computers in Perfect Dark had the monochromatic bar graph, which had the four green bars that just went up and down.
Yep.
I want that as my screensaver. That's just what computers did.
Every one of them, everybody's office. I did enjoy, because they tried to do voice acting. It's not great, but hey, it's voice acting.
The audio is very compressed.
But the minions.
Oh, God.
What they say, like some will go, oh, why?
Holy.
And then others sound like Raiden when he's doing his charge. Why me?
I have a family. All right, no one really says that. But this is another cool thing about the game. Like, there's cool features. Mm-hmm. This game has cool features. Here's one of them. If you can manage to aim and hit an enemy's hand, if they're holding a weapon, you disarm them. Mm-hmm. That's really fucking cool. That's a really fucking cool thing. That is incredibly difficult to do with the targeting system. Mm-hmm. If you do it, though, you get rewarded with the hilarious line, where's my gun? Not, <"Bah!">
And why this, like, super elite spy doesn't have, like, blueprints or a map or some digital readout of like the building she's in.
Yeah.
Like this game would have been so much better if you'd had like a map where you could like just mark stuff so you could get back to places easily. There are so many like doors and they're all like wooden pocket doors like from the 60s and 70s. Yeah. I mean, some stuff, okay, but there's not a whole lot I can say, but we got to the point where like you get to where you're going to rescue this doctor and the computer asks you for a password. Like, I have no idea where. I've already killed all the enemies.
Well, you can't even enter it. So it, like, yeah, cues you in. Yes. Okay, so you I need to find something.
Yeah, and I've met scientists. I've killed enemies. I've checked everybody. No clue.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to anywhere else in the building is like, fuck, man. It's super frustrating.
And I think that is a problem with a lot of first-person shooters of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the things that I enjoy the most now about first-person shooters is that, for the most part, they're not run around a maze, kill the guys, find a key, open a door with a key, new maze, run around the maze, kill guys, find a key, unlock door. And that's
red, blue, yellow key cards in Doom. Like, nope. Power off. Can't do it.
That worked, right? That worked for a while.
It's what they had. Limitations of the software and technology at the time. That's kind of what they had to do. But I hated it then.
Yeah.
And I hate it now.
Fortunately, I feel like a lot of like Far Cry 3, I mean, like
BioShock.
Yeah. Like, they get away from that kind of stuff. Or even if they don't, I mean, really, if you think about it,
it's disguised in a way that it's not going to bother you as much.
It's masked because now all of a sudden there are other things that you can do and you're encouraged to do besides finding a way to the next area.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool that the lead character is a woman, and one that's not overly sexualized from what I saw.
You're right, yeah.
I think that's cool, and it's not made a big deal either. It's not made a big deal that she's a woman. I think that's really neat because I also think they had they did it very well because this was also a period in our history where I feel like it was, oh man.
It's also Laura Croft, Laura Croft days. Right. So.
I mean, easily one of the NPCs.
Laura Croft, the knockoff cousin. Laura Croft.
The orange slice.
The cheese goddess.
Delver.
Laura Croft.
Lauren Croft. I'm sorry if you're listening to this and your name's Lauren Croft, but let's face it, it's probably not.
Right in. Let us know. Let us know, Lauren Croft.
You get to pistol whip people. I think that's kind of cool.
And I like the difficulty because the difficulty is kind of, it's layered because if you go up in difficulty, you get additional objectives. So you have to do more. And of course, like your health goes down a little bit, the enemies become harder to kill, and their AI goes up. So it's just it's not just they take more bullets to kill like a lot of games like this were. So right. Like the difficulties actually they're stratified more you go up. It's interesting, and I like that they did that.
Yeah. It's sad. This game is sad to me. And it's sad because, I mean, it's fun to talk about all the cool shit that's in this game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cool stuff that I haven't seen done in games since then.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's an incredibly boring game for me. And it's because of that maze mentality. And once you kill all the enemies, it's literally me wandering around looking for a password. And that's just not fun to me.
And that's where I wander around for like 30, 45 minutes. It's like, no. I'll have to cheat, and then it'll be like, it'll just be me running off a guide for the whole rest of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you. And that's not a fun experience.
Rare was killing it at this time. Like, the GameCube is not far around the corner. So why not spend more time in development or at least have made a sequel to this game on the GameCube? And did what they wanted to do in the first place. Like, that's sort of how I feel about the Mother series. Like, Atoy did what he could do on the NES, and then the SNES comes out. Okay, he actually has the technology to do what he wanted to do in the first one. And then Earthbound, I feel, was like the realization of what he wanted.
Yeah.
Because, of course, they tried to do, you know, Mother 3 for the N64 disk drive, but there weren't enough qualified 3D designers. So then that just got scaled back to be on the Game Boy Advance. So like, at once that one technology point, he was good.
Right.
So I feel like they should, why there isn't a sequel to this on the GameCube or beyond that?
There was a prequel to it, which came out in 2005, called Perfect Dark Zero.
What was that for?
That came out on the 360.
Okay.
I haven't played it.
Well, I guess Microsoft owns it at that because point. Because of Rare,
And then they re-released, I remember when this happened, they re-released the original Perfect Dark on Xbox Live. And I almost picked it up because I remember when it hit live and I was like, oh yeah, okay, this looks interesting, I'll try it. And I never did. I'm kind of glad, honestly, because I would have been disappointed for wasting those Microsoft space dollars that they have. So, this wasn't for me. Yeah. It just wasn't for me. And even if I played it when it came out, I don't think I would have enjoyed it unless I was playing it with three people.
I mean, you were a PC Master Race kid, so
I was. I'm not ashamed to say it, and I still am a PC Master Race. I mean, it's just, especially for first person shooters, it's just that in this time, that's where you got your first person mm-hmm. shooting experience. I mean, Quake 2 had skyboxes. That was a big deal. Are you familiar with a skybox?
No.
A skybox is you take a level that's been designed and you put it inside a cube, a big cube. On the top of the cube is sky. On the sides of the cube is sky and a horizon. And on the bottom of the cube is ground. So what it does is it gives you the illusion that you're outside. There's a level in Perfect Dark where you're supposed to be outside. It feels like you're in a big black room with buildings in it, because this totally goes back to the hardware limitations that the engine was developed for. There's no sky. It just feels like, okay, well, there's rain and there's skyscrapers, but I mean, clearly I'm in a big fucking black room. So it's painfully obvious. Look, and they're doing what they can with their limitations. I get that. And I feel like they did a good job with it. But I agree. Fucking wait and release this on something that can
You got like the GoldenEye. That's going to be a cash cow for the entire lifetime of the system.
Absolutely.
If you want to follow it up with a spiritual sequel, then just do it the way it should be done. Just wait a little bit.
Part of it, I feel like, is probably GoldenEye did well. They've developed this engine. And it's not going to be an engine that's going to be used for another system. So you might as well make another game with it. I do kind of get that feeling from it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, whatever. Right? I mean, it's tough to talk about games like this because I personally know somebody who loved this game mm-hmm. and still loves this game. And it's one of those where I just can't see it. I just can't. I just can't see it.
Yeah. I mean, I've played tons of first-person shooters, and when I knew what was going on, I was having I wasn't like, oh, fucking A, but like, I was entertained. I was fine. I was going to keep going until I hit that tropey wall, and that was just, I was done.
Yeah.
When I knew what was going on, I could have kept playing. You got any achievements?
I do. I have one achievement.
Yeah.
And that achievement is, in my notes, which I'm pulling up right now, I have an achievement called Have the Lambs Stopped Screaming. And in order to unlock Have the Lambs Stopped Screaming, you have to finish all of the pitch black segments. There are segments in this game where everything is completely dark, and the enemies can totally see you, and they will shoot you. They don't have night vision goggles on, but they know where you are. They have true seeing.
These the aliens, I guess?
Nope. They're just bodyguards. They're just humans. they're just bodyguards who have adapted, like Daredevil. They've just adapted. They've forsaken their sight, and they've developed a supersonic hearing. They can echolocate you and shoot you. You need night vision goggles in order to see them. But okay. So in order to unlock Have the Lambs Stop Screaming, you need to finish all of the pitch black segments with no night vision goggles. You gotta fucking Clarice this shit from Silence of the Lambs. You got to hear their guns cocking. You have to shoot that way.
Yeah.
That's how you unlock it.
It's good. It's good.
Do you have any achievements, Tyler?
I have one, and it's Edward Pistol Hands.
All right.
And that is when you draw dual-wield pistols, switch it to pistol whip, and clear a whole stage just dual pistol whipping.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. One of my favorite things to do in this game, Tyler.
Turn it off.
Another favorite thing to do. Here's the thing. Like, this is why I say I feel like I could enjoy this game if I was playing it with three other people. Because I really did enjoy when you and I were playing against each other mm-hmm. in story mode, and I was just a minion, and I put my guns away, and I just ran up at you and started punching you. That was fun. Like, that's how I could play this game. Like, I could play this game in a completely non-serious fashion. And then I got tired of that and just decided, what happens if I start shooting my own guys? Here's the answer. Nothing. They just die. And like, I figured that's the easiest way to beat this game. That's the easiest way to beat this game is to like start up that mode and just have the minion just kill everybody. Cause they will straight up just stand there and be like, how you doing? Oh, so there should be an achievement for that. Some kind of treachery achievement.
That's good. It's good.
We'll call it Lieutenant Koss.
We get that.
Yes.
If you
get that, you're a cool yeah, person.
Number one in our book.
Tyler.
Yes, Dave.
We've talked about some things.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking about it.
More than you probably thought you would.
Yes. I won't lie. Thank you, Blake. Bad to the bone, skeleton ghost. Mm-hmm. Totally helped me through this. But before we close things up, Tyler, I want to ask you some important questions.
All right.
The first of which being, if you were to give this game a beard that sums up how you feel about it, what kind of beard would it be?
I'd have to give it Daniel Craig's facial hair, like a 5 o'clock Daniel Craig shadow.
Is that a Bond?
Daniel Craig is a Bond.
That's a Bond.
He's the Bond in Skyfall and Casino Royale.
Not a baby gold Bond.
He's the one that comes after Pierce Brosnan.
Okay. Is he the parkour Bond?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. I hear there's one that does parkour.
Probably. He's the latest one.
Okay. All right. And there's also a one that does planking. Those are popular at the same time. So I just assume there was a Bond.
Probably.
006 did all the planking. Tyler.
Yes, Dave.
I got to admit, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't give it the weird polygonal beard of your boss in Perfect Dark. I can't believe I didn't mention the way that these characters are modeled is you've heard of the Uncanny Valley,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
This is like the opposite of the Uncanny Valley, but it's still really disconcerting. It's obvious that it's obvious that these are polygonal models that they just straight slapped human textures on, where it's like, all right, well, we have a face model
ish.
You want to take a photograph of our boss and put his face on it and just wrap it weirdly around it? That's what everyone in this game looked like, except for Agent Dark. Everyone else just looked like, all right, well, here's an analogy. I'm going to make Perfect Dark the real life experience. Here's what I'm going to do. Step one, go out, buy a mannequin. Step two, murder a man. Step three, skin the man and stretch its skin around the mannequin. Give it a gun. There you go. That's what all the enemy, that's what everyone looks like in Perfect Dark. They just look like they're just like these fucking machinations of murder. Just running around, speaking to you in very compressed robotic tones. It's a surreal experience.
I went to a meeting where a surgeon from Louisville came down and gave a talk at college, and he discussed face transplants.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And the first successful one was done at the University of Louisville.
Really?
On a woman, a little Russian girl, had her face like ripped off in a wheat thresher.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So they had to get someone who recently died and got a face donor and attach their face onto her. And like he was talking, like a lot of people ask, well, what does she look like? Does she look like the other person?
Oh, we don't talk about that. is what he answered.
He's like,
I'm a mad scientist.
He's like, the answer is basically like almost if the donor and the recipient were to have had a child, because they look like a blend of both people because
it's the facial structure.
That person's face doesn't fit onto their structure the same, so they look like they will still look somewhat like themselves, just slightly different.
He said the child of the two, but what he wanted to say but couldn't was pretty scary. Yeah, I feel like that's a good analogy. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the game looks like they had a face transplant. Really? I mean, it's true. All right. So sorry, I got us off track. Tyler, if you were to give this game a pair of glasses, what kind of glasses would you give it?
I'd have to give it a pair of glasses that have 10 frames.
Like the number 10 the element?
10 the number.
10 the number.
10 frames.
Okay.
That's about how many frames per second Perfect Dark runs at.
That was a good joke. I like that. I enjoyed that joke.
Because the intro is just like fucking clippy as hell. Because you're just like, ship, big X, buildings, sideways, Joanna Dark.
Starting to sound like a real PC Master Racer to me.
Yeah.
60 frames per second, 4K.
Yeah.
Tyler, I've got another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is the big important one. You're all by yourself, though, mm-hmm. so I feel like you're going to do okay. What I want to know is, how much is this game on Amazon? If you were to buy this game right now, Tyler, on Amazon, how much do you think you'd pay for it used?
$8.
$8. Tyler, actual retail price of Perfect Dark for the Nintendo 64 used on Amazon at the time of this recording is $6.87. Close.
Womp womp.
Close, but over.
I almost just said a dollar because fuck it.
Because why not? Yeah.
I'll win.
And it would have been great if it was a nickel.
Or like that copy of Model Land I bought for Tyler Dunnigan. Forgot to give to him.
He was just here, too.
Yep.
He won that a long time ago.
Yep. Back when NX won at your house, because I bought it for $1 from Amazon, paid $4.99 for the shipping.
Was that Annex One or was that Original Studio?
That was Original Studio.
Wow.
Yep.
Back with the wood paneling.
Henry's room.
Yep. Yeah, Henry's room. He's real proud, by the way, that we used to do the show in his room.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Our ghosts are still there. Yeah.
Yeah. Our present ghosts.
Got anything else to say about anything about this?
I've got a Facebook quiz prepared.
Oh, do you?
No, not really. No, not at all. I just wanted to give. I want to let Peter Panda know if he wants to check
what
out
what Perfect
now.
Dark yeah. minion are you?
I did kind of want to put together a spy quiz, but the only thing I could think of was like, I had like a bunch of Get Smart references, because that's like my expertise on spies is Get Smart.
Like Inspector Gadget, he was a cop, he wasn't really a spy.
Yeah.
So Get Smart and the legitimate Pink Panther.
The legitimate one.
The legitimate one. Not the fucking pink, the panther in that it is pink, but
the panther who happens to be pink.
The Steve Martin reboot, been fine. Hamburger, well, however you want to say it. There you go. There's my movie reference.
You just brought to, I can't believe I never, when you say that Inspector Gadget was a cop, I never sat there and thought about how many cops were robots. There's a lot. A lot of cops who are robots. RoboCop comes to mind.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You can find the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. So don't miss the next episode. We'll be talking about... Shit, I don't think we even really talked about what we're going to do for the next Leadership Monday.
Want to work it out right now?
You do McKids?
McKids. It's got my vote.
Next Monday, McKids. And the following week for other shit, or Original Player Wednesday, I just looked this up, and now it just fluttered on away.
What do you think it is? Just take a guess. Away. I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
It's not Banjo-Tooie. That's in like the week at Pokemon Stadium is the week after. It's, I forget.
It is Pokemon Stadium.
Are you sure?
No.
I think we have this, whatever this next game is Wednesday, and the next one for that is Pokemon Stadium.
I hope you guys enjoy this bit that we do.
Yeah. We know what's going on. We just want to trick you guys because it's just funny. We know everybody's just rolling laughing in their cars like, those guys don't know what's going on. But whatever that is.
We'll do it. I'm looking it up as we speak. As you speak.
You know what all this witty writing and banter deserves? A 5-star iTunes review.
I mean, witty? You go that far?
I mean, yeah. This is pretty good goof. Pretty good goof.
I know we're riding this. It's a thinker.
If you don't think it's funny, then you don't get it. You just need to think about it for a while.
And don't let us know, by the way.
Keep it to yourself. I mean, that's the epitome of wittiness is finding something funny and keeping it to yourself.
The epitome.
The epitome.
Motherfucker, it's Pokemon Stadium.
Is it? All right. I was wrong. You were right. Pokemon Stadium. Which my brother is very excited. So Ryan's going to be on that episode.
He was supposed to borrow that from me, but he didn't.
Yeah, and then he didn't. So I don't know.
So who knows?
Maybe I'm prepared. Maybe he won't be. I don't know.
You know what's after that? You know what's at the Pokemon Stadium?
Banjo-Kazooie?
Yes, sir.
Fuck yeah. Oh, man. I'm so ready for the N64 fellatio I'm expecting from Banjo-Kazooie. Which I told Nicole, was like, this has been really built up. And she's like, grumble.
It was weird to hear you say that right on the tail end of the N64 fellatio you expect to receive.
I asked Nicole.
So I told Nicole,
like, are you going to play this with me? Because I'm expecting something good.
Because I really need to enjoy it.
I haven't enjoyed a good N64 in a long time. But there's a game you want us to play or a guest host you want for a certain episode, leave that in your 5-star written review. And we promise we will get to that eventually.
Don't worry, guys. Like Tyler said, we're going to be back. We are going to be talking about fucking McKids. You know why? Because
about fucking the kids.
Fucking McKids.
fucking
McKids.
Fucking McKids.
Fucking McKids.
We'll be going to jail shortly after we're talking about fucking McKids.
It might be a controversial episode, so make sure you tune in. It might be the last episode with me. We'll see. I don't know. In the meantime, you can always find us at tadpog.com. That's where the show notes live. If you want to, you can find us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/tadpog. There's a lot of cool people there doing a lot of cool shit. You know what? That's the best place to let us know how you felt about this episode, which I have a feeling that all the fans of Perfect Dark will probably do. That's cool. That's fine. Let us know how you feel. I can go ahead and tell you I'm not going to agree with you. You might be able to sway Tyler. I don't know. You can find us on Twitter. We are at @tadpog_podcast. It's cumbersome. I realize it's cucumbersome. I realize. Thank you for everybody who is retweeting us, especially our episode announcements, because that really does get the word out, and that's really cool to see. So thank you very much for that. And just thank you for tweeting at us. That's cool, too. You can call us if you want. Mm-hmm. If you want to be one of the wonderful people who gives us content to play on our all-call show, please feel free to do that at 270-883-2555. You can text us if you want. I honestly prefer phone calls because I like to hear your sweet, innocent voices. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you do that, try to keep it under 3 minutes, and we do love to hear questions. We've got a Patreon. If you're interested in kicking us a few bucks, you can do that at patreon.com/tadpog. Totally optional, and that makes it so much cooler that people have actually done it. Yes. And thank you very much for the people who have done it. We do really appreciate it.
Our theme song, that's Moved by Sycamore Drive. A link to that track can be found in the show notes at tadpog.com.
Excellent.
How you want to close this out? If I didn't say that in just a jumbled, horrible, muffled tone enough, I didn't even close it out.
What'd you say?
I didn't close it out.
Oh, I would like to close it out like, can we do a robot? Can we do, because I feel like, it's just us, mm-hmm. right? It's just you and me, mm-hmm. but we're inside Perfect Dark. We're characters in Perfect Dark, and we need to tell Agent Dark, Joanne. We need to tell Joanne. It's very important that we tell
Joanna?
Her. Tropical Capricorn. I mean, it's one or the other.
Same thing.
That's one of those names that I'll never get right. It just is. Joanne, Joanna, I'm never going to get it right. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to say the wrong thing.
J Dark.
Pretty perfect.
So until next time, Tropical Capricorn!
Exterminate!
We did both go full dark on that. So did you just kill that whole Red Bull? Because I've heard you throw something.
Let's do this shit.
I'm not ready to record.
What if Red Bulls gave you an erection?